And welcome back to the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. I am Chip Patterson, joined by Tom Fornelli. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
And Jerry Hinnan down in Alabama. Jerry, how you doing?
I am doing great, Chip. Tom, it's another great week for some football game picking.
Not a great week for games, though.
Not a great week for games. As longtime listeners and subscribers will know, the Expert Picks podcast goes like this. Tom, Jerry, and I are three of the seven CBSSports.com experts. You can find all of our picks for all the top 25 action against the spread. We go over some of the bigger games as well as any place where we might be divided here on the podcast, as well as this year giving you an inside look into our picks for the confidence pool. The three of us are going up against each other for a season-long confidence pool, and it went very, very well for Jerry, not as well for Tom and I in week one. We will review that in the long con corner here at the end. But as you gentlemen both just alluded to, it's not a fantastic week, but if there was a way to package it, it's almost like a Rose Bowl. Like, I feel like the Big Ten and the Pac-12 have the dominant storylines. Wouldn't y'all agree?
Yes. Yes. The non-conference slate in the ACC, SEC, and Big 12 this week are somewhat lacking.
Yeah, significantly lacking. And you can expect that when you've got some big week one matchups. But, Jerry, what is the best SEC game this week?
Exactly.
Ole Miss is going to Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Ole Miss.
Like everything else is cupcakes. The purest, most sugary, carb-laden cupcakes imaginable. Other than Vandy and Ole Miss.
I've got a place to disagree with you, but we'll get to that later.
Well, South Carolina is playing East Carolina. Actually, is probably the best game, really.
But let's go ahead and start right at the main event. Undoubtedly, a game that maybe, in my opinion, is getting too much invested into it. I look at Michigan State, Oregon, and I am so thrilled because Michigan State has had a very, very dominant defense. It sort of has become an archetype for, I think, what a lot of colleges would like their defense to be, in the fact that it's not necessarily extremely complicated from an X's and O's standpoint, but each individual player is very well coached. And then, of course, Oregon, which for the last 5 years really has been the cream of the crop in terms of big offensive production. The game's in Eugene, and Oregon is a heavy, heavy favorite in this game. We've all picked Michigan State to cover this game, and I want to start with you, Tom. Tell me how you think this one's going to play out. Clearly, we all believe that Oregon's not going to run away with it, but what are you expecting from this game?
I don't know how it's going to play out or who's going to win, but it's like, as you can see with all of us, like you said, picking Michigan State, I don't expect it to be a blowout of any type. And just when I was trying to make my pick, I mean, it was pretty clear to me which way to go, because I just looked at the trends, and Michigan State has just been so freaking good on the road against the spread. In the last 2 years, they're 9-1 against the spread on the road. They're 4-0 as a road underdog. And all time under Mark D'Antonio, they're 30-19-1. And the fact is, Michigan State, even when it does lose, does not lose by a lot of points. The last 2 years, they've lost by an average of 4.5 points per game. And so I look at that, and then Oregon, while it's like 20-2 overall straight up at home over the last few years, it's 10-11-1 against the spread. So it's just, you look at those trends, and it's like, yeah, I think Oregon could definitely win this game. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if they do. They probably will, but not by 13.5 points. I just don't see it happening, because this Michigan State defense, which I have the full-blown man crush on, is just too good, and I don't care how good the offense is. If you read what Chris Brown wrote about Michigan State's defense over at Grantland this week, it's first of all, it's a very good piece, as Chris's stuff usually is, but it's excellent at breaking down what exactly they do and how simplistic it is and how it's adaptable against any kind of offense. So even if they haven't faced the spread offense like they're going to see in Oregon this week, it's not anything that they don't know how to stop.
We got to pick this game at 13.5. Looking at Vegas Insider right now, Vegas Insider consensus is at 12. I would still pick Michigan State there. But, Tom, you and Jerry, I want to get your thoughts on this. Y'all are the only ones predicting Michigan State to win the game straight up. I thought about this. This feels like a game that is going to be incredibly close, especially when you look at, you know, I look at Michigan State Stanford's Rose Bowl game and the way that the Oregon Stanford games have gone in the last couple years. And I definitely think that 13.5 is too much, but I did not feel confident enough. You know, I would still take Michigan State at 11. I would still take Michigan State at 10. I think if you get under 10 points, then I start to get nervous. Jerry, you've got Michigan State winning this game. Was this sort of a you want to call your shot, you want to call your upset right now, or are you feeling really confident about that pick?
I wouldn't say I feel really confident about it. The thought process is, one, Michigan State, I think, is that good. I thought that would take at least a quarter, maybe two, to get going against Jacksonville State. Like, Jacksonville State is a good FCS program. They're top 10 in that division, made the playoffs last year. And Michigan State brushed them aside the way most teams brush Savannah State aside, or at least there for the first, you know, like I said, two quarters before they ease off the gas a little bit. I was impressed with that. I think they are the real deal, particularly the way Connor Cook is playing right now. So that's one thing. The other is, you know, I feel like we've just seen this before. Like, Oregon takes on a team that really knows what it's doing defensively, has a lot of strength up front, which we see with Shalik Calhoun and the rest of the Michigan State defensive line. And once you sort of throw a couple of, you know, monkey wrenches in the gears, they have a hard time getting things going again. We've seen it against Stanford. We saw it against Auburn in the BCS Championship a couple of years ago. You know, even at times we saw it against USC. That game was at home back in, I think, 2011. You know, it's just, I feel like we've seen this movie before. And if Chip Kelly was still on the sidelines, I would say, well, maybe I can overcome that with them being at Autzen. But, you know, those couple of games down the stretch last year with Mark Helfrich, not just, you know, the loss to Stanford, which you can kind of understand, but the blowout loss to Arizona, the squeaker past, you know, really an Oregon State team they would have completely blown apart under Chip Kelly. I've lost that loving feeling when it comes to the Ducks. And so, yeah, I'm taking the Spartans on the road.
Yeah, and Jerry brought up a good point, too, that I think is very overlooked when talking about Michigan State, because we do focus so much on their defense. But Connor Cook has been phenomenal. Ooh, going yeah. back to the end of last season to the bowl game. And I feel like Michigan State on offense is just opening it up a bit more, where it used to just be, we're going to hold the other team to 14 points and we're going to try to score 17 by running the ball. But D'Antonio and that offense have opened things up. They're throwing a lot more, and they're throwing, you know, deep passes and stuff that you're just not used to seeing. And Connor Cook has given them the ability to do that. So this is also a team that is going to be able to put up points on that Oregon defense. So I that's kind of another reason why I went with them straight up too.
It seems almost like the development of Connor Cook as a passer has worked right at the same time as the Michigan State wide receivers getting a little bit better. So now they don't have to rely on Jeremy Langford, who, while productive and does add up yards, he's just not Le'Veon Bell. He could not just come right in there and play that same role. And the fact that they've got a more open offense with, was it Tony Lippett, De'Anthony Arnett somewhere back there, I think. But they've got a, what were you saying?
And Connor Cook is definitely not Andrew Maxwell.
And Connor Cook is 100% not an Andrew Maxwell. All right, let's go to the team that Michigan State played in the Rose Bowl last year. We just mentioned them several times. Stanford at home against USC. In, I think, all of our opinion, we've talked about this offline, but dynamite game. So excited to get just really two Pac-12 heavyweights right here, beginning of the season. I think that them playing right now as opposed to later in the season, which they have done previously, benefits a USC team that is very, very thin and a few injuries away from seeing their Pac-12 title hopes shaken a little bit. All three of us not only have USC covering the 3.5 where we got to pick it. I know that some of you listeners out there might see it at 2.5 or 3, but we're taking the Trojans to go up to the farm and pull off the upset. Jerry, I'm going to start with you. You've been on that USC bandwagon since the preseason. Tell me what you like about this matchup.
Well, what I like about this matchup is that USC pretty much looked like the best possible version of USC last week against Fresno State. The final, I think, was 52-13, but SC fumbled a couple of times, like in Fresno territory. You know, had one or two other, you know, chances to make big plays. They didn't. That game could have been, you know, 66-13, 70-13. Like, it was an even bigger blowout than the final score suggested. Cody Kessler looked as sharp as possible. Nelson Agholor, Buck Allen, the offensive line, all looked the way we expect a USC offense to look. Frankly, they looked reinvigorated, which is kind of what we saw to some extent after Lane Kiffin was fired last season. It was, you know, they just seemed to have more energy, and I thought they played against Fresno with more energy than this program has seen for quite some time. I think that's going to carry over. Stanford is obviously a very, very good team, handled UC Davis the way, frankly, we would expect them to handle UC Davis. Ty Montgomery had another huge game, and, you know, you have to be scared anytime you're picking against Stanford that Montgomery's just going to win it single-handedly. But, you know, I'm just going to repeat what I repeated about Stanford all offseason, which is that they weren't quite as good as their record last season. They beat Washington thanks to Montgomery, despite a pretty big statistical disadvantage. They lost to Utah, had one or two other games that could have gone the other way. I just think USC is the better team straight up. They're more talented, certainly in their starting lineup. The depth issues hopefully won't come into play as much. Leonard Williams missed practice today, I think, but he's probably going to be good to go for the game. I just think, especially after seeing what they did to Fresno, the Trojans are the better team.
Steve Sarkisian at Washington did give Stanford some fits in the last couple of seasons. And then last year, famously, we had the tiff between the two coaches talking about faking injuries. They've both said this week that they've moved beyond it. David Shaw saying there's no animosity at all between the two. But props, I believe, to Ben Gardner, former Stanford defensive lineman, for throwing out the injury faking jab after the Josh Shaw incident at Sarkisian, which I thought was pretty sharp. You know, this, if you're going to talk about faking injuries, Josh Shaw, he didn't exactly fake his injuries, but he wasn't entirely that truthful either. Tom,
that's a nice way of putting it, Chip.
Tom, what
not
you,
entirely that truthful.
Not he lied. Tom, what do you like about this one? Was it? I like the coaching. I'll go ahead and just sort of throw that one in there. I thought that the way that Washington played Stanford was so tight, and they covered that number often in the last couple of years. I don't know if it's 2 out of 3 or something, but I got the idea that this is going to be an awesome game, and if you're going to give me a hook, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and call the upset.
If Jerry's driving the USC bandwagon, and he's been driving it for a while, I hopped on it last week.
Yeah.
When I watched USC in that game against Fresno State, and I mean, we all watched a lot of teams play last week, and we saw a lot of games. That was the most impressive performance I saw from anybody. I mean,
Texas A&M?
Yeah, I was more impressed by what USC did. I mean, the opponent aside, I wasn't that shocked when Texas A&M did that because it's a Kevin Sumlin offense. I did not expect to see USC run 105 plays on offense and to do it so well and with such efficiency. And as you mentioned, they left a couple of touchdowns out on that field. They beat themselves on a couple drives. And that was the talent that we've seen with those high recruiting, you know, the recruiting rankings for their classes the last few years have always been high and the results haven't been there. And like you mentioned, the coaching chip, I just feel like they got a coach there that actually knows how to utilize the talent that he has in those players. And they were just having fun out there. I mean, they were playing football and loving every second of it. And they already had a ton of talent down there. And then they bring in a kid like Adoree Jackson, a 5-star who's playing both ways. He's playing corner. He was playing receiver. There's just so much talent in that team. And Stanford, I have the same kind of concerns that Jerry mentioned with that team. And plus, you know, last week in their game against, who was it, UC Davis, you don't really get a sense of who they are. So I'm just going, I mean, I don't have a ton of confidence here. I think in our confidence pool, I've got 1 point on USC covering, and, you know, I picked them to win straight up because the spread was so small. If you're going to pick them to cover, you might as well pick them to win. But I just, that performance was so impressive, and I don't know what to expect from Stanford yet. But if the USC team that showed up against Fresno State shows up to the farm, they're going to win.
It should be an awesome, awesome game. All right, now moving to a line that got a little bit of interest thanks to the Mike Miller on Twitter, who is not the Mike Miller, any of, I don't think, the professional athletes.
LeBron's boy?
Yeah, I don't think so. But he was reaching out to us talking about this Notre Dame-Michigan line. We got to pick this at 5.5 in favor of Notre Dame, a giant game, really exciting. Tom, what's sort of your read on this game as we go into the last Notre Dame-Michigan game that is at least on the schedule right now?
I don't know what the over-under is currently set at, but I would go for the over. I feel like this is going to be a very much of a shootout type game because Notre Dame's defense is not the same defense we saw 2 years ago. Even with Jalen Smith, it's gotten progressively worse last year. And then looking at it against Rice, it was playing Rice, so you couldn't really judge, but it didn't look that great last week. Michigan's defense stopped Appalachian State, but it wasn't really facing the Notre Dame offense. But I'm going with Michigan because I feel like it's going to be a shootout and it's going to be like a 41-38 type game, whoever wins. So I'll gladly take the points that I'm giving. But also, Michigan's won 4 of the last 5 meetings straight up, and it's covered 4 of the last 5 meetings in this series. And as we've gone over on this podcast many times over the last few years, it's generally just smart to go against Notre Dame when it's a home favorite. It is 19-31-3 under Brian Kelly as a home favorite.
Making me feel bad about taking Notre Dame to cover that number. But I like fading the public as that number has now dropped all the way down to 3.5 in some places. Jerry, tell me what you like about this and what you're expecting.
I disagree with Tom. I think I would take the under on this because I think Michigan's defense is severely underrated at this point. They looked bad at times last season, but that's because Michigan's offense basically fell into a crater and could not escape, and just eventually the defense wore down. There is a ton of talent over there, from the defensive line to the linebackers with Jake Ryan. Joe Bolden's a guy that a lot of Michigan coaches and fans seem to be hyped up about. To the secondary, where Jabril Peppers is actually mostly playing the nickel role right now, which, you know, he's kind of this roving, to some extent, you know, go forward and make plays at the line of scrimmage, but also try to get back in coverage, sort of thing. But, you know, he's not playing the, like, lockdown corner role everybody expected from him, because the guys Michigan already had there, Jordan Lewis, you know, some other guys, basically have that already locked down. Greg Madison, I think, is an outstanding defensive coordinator as well. I think this is an elite defense. I think it's maybe one step below Michigan State's across the entire Big Ten. And, you know, I think it's a, you know, the difference in those defenses is greater than the difference between the two offenses. I think Notre Dame's offense with Everett Golson at the controls probably is a little bit better than Michigan's offense because we're still, you know, have those issues on the Wolverines' offensive line. I don't think have solved themselves in one offseason. But I think things are closer there than they are on the other side of the ball. And I think with Devin Funchess against Appalachian State looked like he was ready to go completely bananas over the rest of this season. And without Kavari Russell, I think he's a big matchup problem for the Irish.
Bunches of Funchess.
Yes.
This weekend, we will also get to see JT Barrett in his second start. Tom, just first of all, what did you take from that Navy game in terms of applying it forward to Virginia Tech? Because that was, it's only one game, small sample size. Obviously, Navy is a very difficult and different opponent, as we mentioned on the Rewind podcast. When sort of projecting forward Ohio State's offense against Virginia Tech's defense, what are you expecting from this matchup?
I don't know if you can take much from that Navy game and put it forward to Virginia Tech because it's so different when you're facing, first of all, Navy's defense, which doesn't have quite, let's say, the athletes that Virginia Tech has, and then also the Ohio State defense facing a Virginia Tech offense, which is very much different from what they had to deal with Navy and the triple option and the cut blocks constantly. So, I mean, I don't have a – I took Ohio State – or did I – no, I took Virginia Tech. I'm sorry. I took Virginia Tech to cover the spread here, but I don't really have a ton of confidence in this pick, as you can tell, because I couldn't remember who I picked. But I took Virginia Tech simply because I didn't really see anything from Virginia Tech last week that we could take seriously based on their opponent. And Ohio State didn't blow me away either, obviously. It's just I feel like with a young quarterback in JT Barrett against that Virginia Tech defense – this one's probably going to be close, even if Ohio State does pull out the win, which I do expect them to. But I'm going to take the 11.5 points from the Hokies just because I feel like this could be a 24-14 type of game.
Yeah, still no Noah Spence. Virginia Tech has Texas Tech transfer Michael Brewer in at quarterback, who had a decent debut. They've got a couple freshman running backs that have been looking good. Jerry, where are you feeling this game? What kind of score are you thinking?
24-14 sounds about right. 16. I'm with Tom. I honestly have no idea what to do here because I cannot stand Virginia Tech's offense. I am not a Scott Loeffler fan at all.
Frequent listeners, will know that.
What was that?
I said frequent listeners will know that you are not a Scott Loeffler.
You don't
fan.
Like Scott Loeffler?
No, believe it or not.
This is the first I've heard of this.
Was not impressed with his season at Auburn. Was not impressed with his season for Virginia Tech last year. The Hokies going on the road. I do not expect them to put up a lot of points at all on this very talented, if sort of erratic, Ohio State defense, although the defensive line, obviously, Adolphus Washington had a very, very good game against Navy, should have a very, very good game here. But at the same time, you know, JT Barrett basically made just enough mistakes to make you think he was good against Navy. Like, make no mistake, had an excellent second half. Ohio State's playmakers basically were just too much for Navy down the stretch, not just Barrett, who is Ohio State's leading rusher as well, by the way. But Dontre Wilson, Devin Smith, all those guys, just too much for Navy to handle. But see, like, Virginia Tech can handle those guys. They've got, you know, Kyle Fuller, or Kendall Fuller. Who left and who's still there? I never keep them straight.
Kendall's still there. Kyle Fuller's here in Chicago.
Kyle Fuller's with the Bears.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so Bears. Kendall Fuller. It's not my fault. Both their names begin with K and they're brothers. So Kendall Fuller and those guys, you know, they can handle Ohio State's playmakers to some extent. The under is 47. Like, to me, that's the bottom line, is no one's expecting a lot of points in this game because Virginia Tech's defense is so good and their offense is so bad. And when you're talking about that kind of game, it makes sense to grab the points. But it also won't surprise me if Ohio State wins 24-7 and covers without too much of a sweat. It's a tough game to call.
Before we move into Kansas State at Iowa State, good question from T Bills, which is at Rhino Hyde on Twitter. Is the Big 12 now underrated? I think a lot of this storyline comes from West Virginia and Oklahoma State putting up a good fight against some of the top two teams in the country. But he also said, how good is West Virginia? How bad is Texas Tech? And we'll segue that right into Kansas State at Iowa State in terms of our pick for this weekend. But, Jerry, real quick to you, did you change your opinion of the Big 12 after week one?
Not really. I changed my opinion of Oklahoma State. I thought, you know, I've been saying throughout the preseason that the Big 12 is a team that has six really good teams at the top that are all going to beat each other on any particular given Saturday, and that depth at the top was going to keep them out of college football playoff, not because they're not good, but because almost sort of the way people think of the SEC, they were going to beat each other up. You know, but now I think what you want to do is promote Oklahoma State to that group and maybe demote Texas if David Ash can't come back. But, you know, Baylor, Oklahoma State now, Kansas State, TCU, all of those are very quality programs.
You're down on Texas Tech.
Texas Tech, I don't think is in that group, but I think they're still pretty good. I wouldn't worry too much about that Central Arkansas game. Texas Tech had 600 yards to roughly Central Arkansas's 400, or maybe it's like 640 to 400. There's a huge yardage advantage that was undone by like a couple of Texas Tech interceptions. Basically, I'm not that worried about them. They are actually my number one confidence pick this week to cover on the road at UTEP. So I'm not that down on them. I just don't think they're as good as, you know, that top six.
And Tom, break down this Kansas State at Iowa State game, a game where all seven CBSSports.com experts have Kansas State covering 12.5 points. I think we said Iowa State just didn't look very good last week.
Yeah, no, I've got Kansas State as my 10-pointer in the confidence pool this week, and I hate giving up this many points with a road team in a conference game. But it's more a reflection of, like you said, how I feel about Iowa State, because it just does not look good. I mean, losing to North Dakota State is fine. You know, just about every FBS team has done it by now. But Iowa State wasn't a good team to begin with. And then you saw that performance against North Dakota State where they truly looked like an FCS patsy during that game. And now it's lost its best wide receiver for the year. I mean, Iowa State just strikes me as a team that's going to be very bad this season, and I mean like finish behind Kansas in the conference standings bad.
No.
Well,
let's not say things we can't take back.
I think Kansas is going to beat Iowa State. I think that's going to be the difference maker.
Listen, they looked okay, and I think that there was even some thought in the first. They were hanging with North Dakota State for maybe a quarter and a half, maybe the whole first half. I don't have the box score put up in front of me, but
then they wore out.
The tone changed in that game, and And I think that the way it finished sort of left a lot of people feeling like this is not going to be the year. Like, Iowa State is a sexy pick because you like Paul Rhodes and you think they're going to have a tough defense and you think they're going to knock some people off. And Iowa State very well might still get that one patented upset at some point during the season, or at least near upset. You know, they played Texas really, really close and, you know, had a couple weird fumble calls away from maybe pulling that upset. But, man, I do not think that I do not think this is the case. I definitely do not think it's the case against this particular Kansas State team, which we predicted Kansas State the right way last week. I think we're going to predict it the right way this week. All right.
Yeah, and I will say this for Iowa State. Alan Lazard, the wide receiver freshman that's replacing Bundridge, who they lost for the year, he has a chance to be really good.
Okay.
I just don't see it from Iowa State as a whole. I don't think that defense is very good. And aside from maybe Lazard, if he lives up to the hype, I don't know what there is on that offense to get excited about.
Missouri at Toledo is a game that is getting a lot of interesting attention heading into this weekend. Tom, I'm gonna go right back to you on this one. We got to pick this at 6.5. I think the public line most places is somewhere closer to 4.5.
Yes, Jerry informed me of that after I put in my confidence pick taking Missouri at 4.5 and broke my heart a little bit.
What's are you still taking him at 6.5?
Yeah, I didn't, you know. I still feel confident enough in an SEC team to beat a MAC team, but I loved the 4.5. At 6.5, I'm kind of like,
You don't just go into
the that big a difference.
You don't go into the glass bowl.
You know, there's a lot more backdoor potential for a 6.5 point spread than there is for 4.
What do you think,
Jerry? Still under a touchdown between like 3 points and 7 points. It's not a huge amount of difference.
Just trying to build drama here.
What's your thought on them, Jerry? Are y'all feeling like Missouri's going to come in here? Because the points looked good, the final totals looked great, but I don't think, and I did not, I will admit, I did not get to watch as much of the Missouri game as I thought, but I thought that it was a little bit deceiving. I made a note on my pad, and I mean Saturdays are like 18-hour blurs, but somewhere on my pad I said, did Matty Mock have like kind of a secretly bad or inconsistent game? And I'm still not ready to buy into Missouri that they're just going to keep things rolling from last year. I'll take Toledo in the upset. I'll take Matt Campbell playing in the Glass Bowl, or at least I didn't pick him straight up to win. I'll at least take him to cover this number.
I was about to say, wait, what?
But I'm not all in on Missouri. I could be wrong. This might be the week that I reverse it. But last week might have been a mirage, Jerry. What do you think?
I don't know. I think the Tigers started off really well, and South Dakota State's a pretty good team, too. And then kind of, from what I can tell, took their foot off the pedal a little bit. I'm with Missouri. I think there are reasons to back Toledo here. They're a very good team, certainly by MAC standards. I think with Bowling Green losing their quarterback, they might even be the MAC favorite. They're at home where they beat Cincinnati, if not last year, year before. I don't remember exactly when. But Missouri still has just so much more talent than Toledo, and at less than a touchdown, I think you've got to take the Tigers. This, to me, feels like an overreaction. I don't think Missouri is as good as they were last year. You know, I don't think they're a serious threat to win the SEC East this year. They're not in that Georgia, Florida, maybe even South Carolina tier again, I don't think. But it's Toledo. Like, they really ought to be better than Toledo.
All right.
I know Missouri hasn't been in the SEC for very long.
How?
Because it's playing a scheduled road game against a MAC team.
Yep.
That's some Big 12 crap right there.
Well, here's some.
Not that it's completely unprecedented for SEC teams.
But to go on the road against the MAC?
Yeah. Well, maybe the MAC. Ole Miss played a game at Arkansas State several years ago.
That's
still
though.
The footprint.
You know, Mississippi and Arkansas don't. You know, they got that. They got that history.
You
Arkansas State.
No, I'm just saying the states, not the schools. The states.
but there's not that same kind of love between Missouri and Ohio.
No, it's not really a rivalry there. It's just, hey, we're in the Midwest. Let's play a MAC team.
Well, speaking of scheduling quirks, Ole Miss will travel to Vandy for the second straight season. Why?
That was a great seg, Chip.
Why? Like,
high five for that one, dude.
This is
because the SEC, like, in their rush to expansion, you know, has had some of these little hiccups. Auburn hosted Georgia 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
It's not that uncommon. Illinois is opening its Big Ten schedule at Nebraska for the second straight year.
This is what happens. Well, all right, well, here's a question. Ole Miss
should do a quirky scheduling podcast.
That's going to get so we'll be right at the top of the iTunes charts then. That's sure. What's taking us over the top. This when James Franklin was there, this was a close game. They played this on a Thursday night to open the season, and it was a thriller. This was the matchup where Matthews went ham. Was it last year or 2 years ago?
Like, both.
Both. Anytime he was on the field.
He was Jordan Matthews.
So Vanderbilt loses to Temple. Ole Miss pulls away late after a struggle-ish first half against Boise State. And we enter week two with Vanderbilt as a 19.5-point underdog at home against number 15 Ole Miss. Tom and I are taking Vanderbilt, and I just thought while Ole Miss has decidedly more talent and is a decidedly better team, I just didn't like nearly three touchdowns here, especially when Bo Wallace threw those three first half picks. I don't have a lot of great, I don't have a lot of great stats to back that one up. Tom, are you coming at me with some trends here?
I don't have really any trends for you other than what you mentioned. I just feel like this line is a bit of an overreaction to the Temple loss, which is understandable because Vanderbilt looked terrible in that game, but it was also delayed for a few hours and terrible storms. So, you know, you kind of get hyped up for a game and then you sit around for 2 hours and, you know, you can kind of lose it. But Vanderbilt's not a great team. We know that. But as you said, I am just not very comfortable giving up nearly three touchdowns with Bo Wallace on the road. Because you know he is going to help Vanderbilt stick around a little bit longer.
He has a great completion percentage if you include interceptions.
For sure. He's like one of the most accurate passers in the country when you include interceptions.
All right, Jerry, now that we've dogged Ole Miss, tell us why they're going to cover this 19.5-point spread.
Because Vandy is rotten. Like, I watched basically every snap. Vanderbilt did not score an offensive touchdown at home against Temple. They lost by 30
Is
points
that bad?
At home to Temple. Yes, their 7 points was on a fumbled Temple punt. They were so
God, that game was so horrible.
Awful. I think it's perfectly capable to overreact to that Vanderbilt-Temple game. I don't think this spread is reacting enough. There are some teams every year that at the end of the season they've gone 2-10 because the odds makers just have not accounted for how terrible they are. And I really wondered after that Temple game. Temple, they went 2-10 last season.
And when Temple is playing in the Peach Bowl in 3 months, you'll see.
P.J. Yeah. Walker for Heisman.
Yeah, you know, I realize things got a lot better when Walker took over, but still, team that lost to Fordham beat Vandy by 30 points at home. I'm pretty sure Ole Miss can manage three touchdowns, particularly the way Ole Miss's defense. You know, everybody's talked about, oh, well, Wallace looked really shaky, and that's fair. I think Wallace looked too shaky to think, oh, they're going to contend in the SEC West. But that defense also was violent. They put on a show against the Broncos. Robert Kimdiche looked like the five-star man beast he's always been hyped to be.
Cody
if
Pruitt.
Vandy can't score against Temple, they're not going to score against Ole Miss either. I don't think they're going to score more than 7 points. And I think especially with Vandy's offense handing out party favors left and right the way they did against Temple, I think Ole Miss's offense can score 30 without too much of a problem.
All right. Okay. Now let's keep it in, Vanderbilt, keep it in the SEC East. ECU travels to Columbia to play South Carolina, a Gamecock squad that just got clobbered on the first Thursday night of the college football season. ECU is an air raid offense. Offensive coordinator Lincoln Riley and Ruffin McNeil both coming from Mike Leach's staff at Texas Tech. This is a very interesting game for ECU, a team that is becoming and I am absolutely taking some North Carolina bias here with this intro, but a team which, guys, correct me if I'm wrong, with Houston's loss, they are now, I would say, Houston's loss to UTSA at home, you could say that ECU is kind of in that trendy group of maybe four or five teams that might be in contention for that one spot on New Year's Eve at the end of the season.
If they can get past Temple.
If they can get past Temple and P.J. Walker, the future Heisman candidate. But we've got ECU plus 15.5 is taken by Dennis, Jeremy, John, Tom, and myself. Palm and Jerry Hinnon, the Jerry brothers,
the Jerry's,
are on South Carolina. So I will turn it over to Jerry and have you tell me how South Carolina can fix things and cover this big spread.
It's not something I feel super confident in. Combining Shane Carton and that Lincoln Riley air raid offense you mentioned with South Carolina's inexperience in the secondary, clearly, which caused them some problems here and there against Texas A&M.
511 yards of problems.
You know, to be giving away the more than two touchdowns on the spread here. But to me, South Carolina can't be as bad as they were last week. Like, this is a team that just has, you know, too much talent and too much coaching to be that terrible 2 weeks in a row. East Carolina is a good team. They're well coached, but they lost a lot off of their defense last season. It wasn't a great defense to begin with. I think particularly playing at home, if this was another one of the neutral site games South Carolina and East Carolina played in the past, I'd probably be taking the Pirates. But I think at home, you know, SC can get things right here. That young secondary, you know, at least they've gotten their, you know, feet wet. The defensive line that, you know, struggled so badly against Texas A&M, you know, Texas A&M's offensive line is freaking awesome, and a lot better than East Carolina's line. I just think, Shane Carden's going to hit a few plays, but I don't think that Pirate defense is going to be able to keep the Gamecocks in check. And, you know, yeah, I think they can cover just barely, let's say, 42-25.
Yeah.
Something like that.
All right. I got you right there. Real quick, going off to another listener request, at Kurt's uncle on Twitter wants to talk that BYU Texas. 3.5 until we find out about David Ash, and then it dropped to 1. Is it to a pick 'em yet? Have you guys seen?
It's still
the latest one.
How do you readjust? All right, 4.5 down to Texas, -1. This is at home. BYU certainly has Taysom Hill, and I think Jamal Williams, who was suspended for BYU's opener, their leading running back, should be back as well. Obviously, we're expecting until proven otherwise, you expect a Bronco Mendenhall defense to be prepared, especially when Tyrone Swoops, the new Texas starting quarterback, does not exactly present a big threat down the field in terms of the passing game. Expecting a lot of run, expecting BYU to try and take advantage of the backup center that's in with Espinosa out. Let's start with you, Tom. How would you react to Ash's injury this game? And we didn't have to pick it, but how would you?
It's a 1-point spread for a reason at this point. I mean, you're just picking the winner, and I do feel like it's somewhat of a toss-up. And it's hard for me to really judge Texas because since that game was on Longhorn Network last week, I didn't get to see it. What I did see was BYU look really good against UConn in spurts. But, you know, Taysom Hill had a great game, but there was like a quarter and a half where BYU kind of disappeared and didn't get anything done. And UConn's not a very good team. So, I mean, I love Taysom Hill. I have no idea what to expect from Swoops at quarterback now that Ash is gone. But from what I heard about the Texas defense in their opener, it was fantastic. It was mean. It was everything you expect from a Charlie Strong defense. So I feel like the outcome of the game is a toss-up. I'm slightly leaning Texas just because it's in Austin, and I think there's probably somewhat of a revenge factor for the embarrassment that Taysom Hill and BYU put on them last season. But I think the safer bet might be the under.
Oh, yeah. Let's see, over-under was at 51, drops down to 46.5. And yeah, I think I'm thinking
20 to 13 here.
Yes.
What kind of score are you thinking, Jerry?
I was going to say 23 to 17, 23 to 13. I would take BYU here. Texas's current offensive staff, okay, Charlie Strong.
Vance Bedford is mean.
You know, being there, just when at Louisville, I never got the sense that I want to be nice here.
Teddy Bridgewater did not strike me as
particularly creative as coaches that were really maximizing their offensive talent necessarily, and to be a first season in a place is already difficult enough, and then to take away far and away your best quarterback, and be relying on a guy in Swoops who, was already, you know, rawer than I think you would like, and now has to adjust to new schemes and new play calls and a new playbook, all of this kind of stuff. I think it's going to be ugly. BYU doesn't have as good a defense this year as they have the last couple, but Bronco Mendenhall has not forgotten how to coach that side of the defense. I think this is going to be an ugly, ugly game because Texas's defense is absolutely legit. Cedric Reed, Quandre Diggs, the whole bunch. Charlie Strong knows very well what he's doing on that side of the ball. I think it's going to be an ugly, ugly game. I would like BYU, and I think the under, as we've already said, is probably the safest bet in this particular game.
All right, Tom. The Long Con Corner. You have received everybody's confidence pool picks. If you're listening to this Wednesday, sorry, you need to wait another day. But on Thursdays, we will be posting our confidence pool picks, as well as, of course, you will be able to access the Expert Picks podcast. What stands out to you in terms of what games people like, don't like, what's going to be on the line?
We are all very big fans of Colorado State all of a sudden.
Oh, what do you mean all of a sudden? Of
all
course.
All of a sudden, somebody was driving the bandwagon that wasn't us, and all three of us jumped on after seeing them beat Colorado last week. No, I've got 5 points on the Rams over Boise State on the road, plus 10.5. Jerry's got 4 points on him, and Chip, you got him as your lock of the week at the 10 points. So I would wonder, you know, what made you so confident in the Rams?
If you give me a good rushing offense against a Boise State's offense, and again, credit to Robert Kimdiche, Cody Pruitt, that whole Ole Miss defense, they really made life hard. But Grant Hedrick.
Tony Connor.
Grant Hedrick, Boise State's quarterback, did not impress me at all. And I just don't think that Boise State is going to put up enough points, or their defense is going to be able to slow down the combination of DeHart, Alabama transfer, and Jarrell. Isn't that his name? Tom, didn't I just sent it to you. The JUCO transfer. Yeah, the two running backs.
Treyus Jarrell.
So they combined for 260 yards and three touchdowns on the ground against Colorado. Colorado, not necessarily any type of grand defense, but if you're going to do that against Colorado, I expect you're going to have some success against Boise State's defense. It looked like way too many points. I would think that Colorado State could win, but if you're going to give me all those points, then I'll take it.
Yeah, as far as our other picks, I mean, I think it's a reflection of the schedule this week because there are so many iffy games. I mean, there's a lot of variety in our picks this week, whereas last week the three of us were picking a lot of the same games. Really, this week, besides that Colorado State game, we're all in different places. I mean, both me and you, Chip, we've both got Western Kentucky covering against Illinois at plus six on the road. But I don't know if you saw the stat yesterday before making your pick, but I saw a stat that I think Western Kentucky is 7-0 in their last games where they're a single digit underdog against the spread.
Oh,
and I think that's going to continue against Illinois, who did not look very impressive against Youngstown State last week. And then Jerry's got most of the picks that we kind of stayed away from. He's got Texas Tech, as he mentioned, as a 10-point favorite. Neither of us picked Texas Tech in any other game. He's got Akron as a plus 14.5-point underdog on the road against Penn State. Neither of us – I picked Penn State. You stayed away from that game. He's got Utah covering Fresno State and then UCLA. And these are games that we generally stayed away from. But Jerry's got a lot of confidence in them. So he's kind of where you were last week. So, Jerry, are you prepared to go 4-6 and score 21 points? I would appreciate it if you did.
I don't think that's going to happen, though. Just one quick mention about that UCLA thing. UCLA is 6-2 against the spread the last 2 years. When they come home for a home game after being on the road the previous week. Anyways, that game is at 9 p.m. Memphis time, so UCLA is kind of getting the karmic
you
retribution.
And your UCLA body clocks.
I do. This is my entire wagering strategy, is what time is UCLA kicking off?
They pounded
Houston a couple of years ago in a very similar sort of situation. I'm expecting them to pound Memphis, too.
Yeah, and I got UCLA covering this week, too. I just didn't want to put the 7 on it because 24.5 is a lot of points.
It's a decent number.
That is a bad UCLA offensive line against an underrated Memphis defensive line. That's all I'm thinking.
Yeah, but I don't think the Memphis defense is quite as good as what we saw from Virginia last week either.
No. But I will say that in terms of public perception, if Memphis covers and I get the victory in expert picks because of it, I'm not expecting that it's going to be like a 7-point game. It'll be UCLA wins handily, like
41-17,
30-10.
You get the win on the hook there.
Yeah, no, if it's that, then I'm just going to be gloating. The entire next week's podcast is me talking about all the great things of Memphis. Actually, I'll have Gary Parrish on, and he'll just talk about how awesome Memphis is.
Another question for Jerry. Earlier this week, you jumped in the campfire, and I mean, both me and Chip took Arizona -7 against UTSA, and you were one of the first people that mentioned how you felt that line was an overreaction. What changed your mind? You didn't include him at all in your 10 games.
I didn't. It just weirded me out. Like, I don't know. It's a Thursday night. I don't like taking road favorites in midweek games. Like, it's bad enough.
It's probably a good philosophy.
On Saturdays. But, you know, this is the biggest game in UTSA history. Like, let's be clear about that. They're, you know, got the huge win against Houston last week. They're playing
long and illustrious history
on TV. I know. I'm just saying. You know, I realize this isn't saying a whole lot, but, you know, they have, like, an active fan base. They're, you know, they're going to be pumped up.
They have
up
a supportive
game.
Fan. They fill up the Alamo Dome.
They do.
They have fans.
Exactly. So, you know, I think Arizona's going to win that game. I think the line seems weird for a team that has that big a talent advantage to only be a touchdown favorite. But I couldn't make myself pull the trigger because, you know, Rich Rod's teams also have a weird habit of, like, piling up giant yardage advantages and then just not cashing in. And on the road on a Thursday night, I could see that happening in them only winning by, like, you know, 6 points or something. So I stayed away.
Yeah. No, I understand.
I get it.
It just seemed like an overreaction.
Yeah, that spread feels too small to me. I was really impressed with the new Salvin in that opening game. So I stuck with him, but I totally understand where you're coming from there.
One last one, one for the road right here. Tom, you feeling good about Tulsa, or are you down on Oklahoma?
I'm not really either way. I just feel like 24.5 points or whatever it was. Tulsa at home. I mean, Oklahoma, it's the same things, same concerns I had about that team coming into the season. Last week's win didn't really dissuade me from it. I just don't know that Trevor Knight is the consistent quarterback that we saw from the Alabama game yet. If he becomes it, then yeah, I don't think Oklahoma has any problem covering against this at Tulsa, but it's a road game against an in-state rival with 24.5 points. I'll take the over 3 touchdowns, and even though I don't expect Oklahoma to lose, I think Tulsa is going to at least hang around for a bit and make it somewhat respectable for 3 quarters.
Hey, you want a fun fact about this game?
Yes.
Tulsa has lost its last 7 games against Big 12 opponents in the regular season against the spread. Over their last 7. That includes 4 games against Oklahoma and Oklahoma State.
But Tom's with Dennis on this pick, and so I cannot.
Yeah, so you're screwed. Put it that way. I was talking to Jerry about this earlier. I says, out of the games in the expert picks, me and Dodd agree on 15 of them, so I know I'm getting at least 15 games right this week.
Yeah, basically.
Because he's an unstoppable picking machine.
And he does them, like, instantly. He just looks at them, calls it, emails it right back.
Like, he's expert pick Rain Man.
I'll just go ahead and tell you what I think the difference is. His default setting is the underdog, and our default setting is the favorite. And, you know, these lines are geared towards, because people like betting on the favorites, we're, you know, the suckers that everybody else is, that we like. We see how good these teams, particularly in the top 25, are, and we think, oh, they'll cover that easy. They're so good. And when we don't think, you know, we just naturally gravitate towards the favorite. And I think Dodd naturally gravitates toward the underdog. But all that said, you know, how many games ahead of myself and John Solomon Dennis is right now? 1 game. In the standing.
But last year he worked.
How
everybody.
Many games was yes. he ahead of us last year, though?
And the year before.
Like 40?
Hey, 2 years ago I won this thing. Thank you.
Hey, now.
He's got a plaque hanging up in his office, actually, just to remind him of that every day.
Oh, I made it
2012 myself. Expert pick champion, Jerry.
That's right. Drawn on there with a Sharpie. And
with like a Vince Lombardi quote.
It's high quality plywood I jigsawed.
You
that I found behind the hardware store dumpster.
He is Jerry Hinnan. You can follow him on Twitter at Jerry
Hinnan.
Behind
the hardware store.
I needed some trial.
I mean, you were living in New Mexico you were living in New Mexico at the time, right? Or Arizona. What? Sorry.
Don't build things in Arizona?
No, but I'm saying, why would somebody go behind a hardware store in Arizona in the middle of the desert?
Breaking Bad.
Were you cooking methamphetamines?
I think so.
Well, also, I needed the plaque plywood.
Because honestly, I think building a plaque to convince yourself that you're the expert pick champion on a piece of plywood is something that a meth head would do.
If it walks like a duck.
He's like scratching his arm the entire time. Gotta find some plywood.
He is Jerry Hinnan at Jerry Hinnan.
Hi, folks.
He's been hanging out with Wes Welker.
He's Tom Fornelli, and he's sweating. Woo! You can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Please continue to hit us with any suggestions, games you want to hear us talk about on the podcast. We'll be sure to include them. We like to thank those of you who chimed in for this week, and maybe if you hit us with enough good picks, maybe you'll become an expert picker. Maybe. On CBSSports.com, you can weigh in and make your own pick and see all of our top 25 games against the spread. For Jerry Hinnan and Tom Fornelli, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.